Accession number 12707, Captain Frank Brewis, Reel 10.
Captain HCF Brewis, Reel 10. Settling into Haydon Bridge, Captain, what were the conditions like?
Well, Haydon Bridge is a small village, way out in the country, right down on the River Tyne. At that stage, I was still nominally attached to D Company, although I was doing the same sort of job. I do an awful lot of motorcycling, but they dropped the rather nebulous motor contact officer thing and reverted to the more sensible liaison officer. D Company, we found ourselves on what was called the show field, obviously an annual agricultural show. Literally just on the outskirts of the village, less than 100 yards from the centre of the village, on the south side of the river. The village was split by the river, it was on both sides. And it was a hutted camp. The company commander, Rupert Blackett, who was regular Durham's, can't remember whether he was first or second, he got himself a caravan and installed his wife and newborn child in the caravan and had a horse tethered to it and a greyhound. Rather disrespectfully, we always used to think that Rupert, the greyhound and the horse all looked alike. We were invited on one occasion to go and have a drink with him, and he was demonstrating how handy the caravan was and all the fitments, but he opened the wrong door and a whole pile of dirty nappies descended on the floor. However, that's by the way. I think D Company's accommodation was typical of the rest. At one stage, B Squadron, as it later became, was detached to a training area near Netherwhitton, sort of mid-Northumberland. C Squadron, as it came to be known, was at Ridley Hall at Baden Mill. It had been requisitioned from some member of the Bowes Lyon family. So they lived in relative comfort, if not luxury. The headquarters staff were, as I said, in this requisitioned house standing in its own grounds up the hill, Threepwood. The members of the headquarter company who were there were in huts in the ground. And there weren't very many of them, but they had their own cookhouse. The officers' mess in Haydon Bridge was the requisitioned Anchor Hotel. That was quite spacious. While I was there, rather than Threepwood later on, it was about four officers to one of the larger bedrooms. That was the sort of standard. We had brought the such officers' mess furniture as we had, mainly beds, with us. By that time, the men had, I think then, double bunks. Double bunks with the with the wire mattress and the three biscuits, as they were called, the three-section mattresses. It was winter coming on. One stove that was usually stoked up to being red hot almost per Nissen hut or Tannen hut. I think we already had the what nowadays are called body warmers, the sleeveless jerkins, khaki wool cloth inside and beautiful leather outside, that were worn when it was cold, but a great coat would be cumbersome. I think because it was a country area, I think some of the cooks managed the extra chicken now and again, mostly acquired honestly. Later on, I'm jumping the gun. I was going to say later on when I had the scout car section. Driving instruction was was termed by the bods in the troop as the egg hunt. But that was later on. But it did go on. There was some supplementing of rations, I think.
Was this for men as well as officers?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. I'm talking about the men's cooks. Ours was supplemented on one occasion. Peter Spencer, who was a good shot, brought down a deer up on the fells during that winter. And there were a couple of haunches hanging in the Anger Hotel, and we kept saying, surely it must have hung long enough by now. It had acquired a sort of leather exterior by this time, but the cook we had would come and wrap it with his knuckles and say, no, a bit longer yet. And immediately opposite, there was another hotel, the Scots Arms. And we got to know the proprietor there very well, because it was a good place for wives to come. And because he was patronised by the regiment, he said he would deal with this for us. And we said, well, we'll try it with one of the haunches first, and we'll see how we like it. So that was duly marinated in red wine and encased in a pastry crust. And the leather outside came away beautifully, and it was gorgeous. So, although army rations were adequate, plain but adequate, they could be supplemented. I can't think of anything pertinent to that early stage.
How did the inhabitants receive you, descending on them in quite large numbers, and particularly charging all over the countryside?
Well, I think because there were army huts erected already, that they were used to the military.
We were,
yes. There was one formidable lady who, I think she'd already acquired the habit of entertaining commanding officers, and she would have the CO and the second in command for a meal now and again. Various officers brought their wives, and in some cases family, to live in the village, or on some of the farms round about. And there was a tiny little cinema in the village. We weren't all that far from Hexham, another cinema, a dance hall for leisure hours. And I think we got on very well. They were very hospitable people, very hospitable. One of the things I had to do earlier, quite early on, was to go up to the Roman Wall immediately, a few miles north of Hayden Bridge and Barden Mill. I'm not sure how they were informed. Obviously, somebody higher up the chain of command had got in touch with the... Well, as it happened, it was the Carlisle Antiquarian Society, and had told them that there would be tank training instead of infantry training going on in the near future. So I had to meet this old gentleman from Carlisle, who was very anxious about what we would do about the necessity of crossing the vallum and the wall and the ditch to the training areas beyond. And as far as it was within my limited power, we agreed on certain crossing points off the existing roads where the vallum was shallower. There were places where it was remarkably still quite deep and quite an abrupt slope on either side, and didn't matter so much about the wall, because in many of the places where we would be wanting to go, General Wade had built his road right actually on the wall. There was always the question of the ditch on the north side. So I had to put a report into Brigade Headquarters through our CO on the provisional arrangements that had been made to see if that satisfied the Brigadier. I should have said earlier, when we're talking about regimental title, that we became part of 35 independent tank brigade. Very often the independent was left out later on, but it was a brigade on its own, not under a division at that time. Later on, I'll have to think about it, which division it was, before the 79th. It'll come to me. And I think there was some slight modification to it, that more crossings were needed, but somebody else got the job of taking it further than that. So, the surplus infantrymen went here, there, and but mostly to other Durham battalions. And we started getting Royal Tank Regiment officers posted in. I mentioned Malcolm Dees, who was regular RTR. He came in and replaced Major Harwood as... Oh, Colonel was Daddy, and Harwood was Uncle. We said goodbye to him, and I think he went to a training establishment. We got a Captain Gillingham, RTR, and we got our first Churchill not long after he came. And first time we'd seen one of these monsters. But the little 2-pounder pop gun on it was sort of out of keeping with the hull.
You had any training or lectures preparing you for the receipt of
tongues? No, not at this stage. I'm probably ahead of myself. But anyway, just to finish off that little bit, he took it away up the Allendale Road, and he was not knowledgeable about Northumbrian peat bogs. And his own tank, wherever he'd come from, was called Jhansi, which I think must be somewhere in India. And he had this one named Jhansi, had it painted on. So Jhansi was taken away up the road towards Allendale, and he would demonstrate its cross-country performance.
Is this your second in command?
No, this was Captain Gillingham. But he was our first tank expert, in inverted commas. And he got 30 yards off the road, and it bellied. Right down to the belly on the peat. And the back end in a rising pool of peaty water. Panic. Tried out the unit recovery scammel. But when they started to operate the winch that they'd hooked onto the back end of the Churchill, it just pulled the scammel along the road towards the tank. And we gathered at the time that there was nothing north of Catrick that would pull it out. And I don't for the life of me know how they did get it out. I've got a feeling that there was a lot of bods with spades and shovels and brushwood and small trees chopped down in the area to eventually make some sort of track out. The difficulty was that the road was much higher than the surrounding ground. Anyway, it eventually must have got out. I'll tell you later on about tank names, because each one had its own name. Where do we get to now? 1st of January 1942 was the official conversion. The other ranks were transferred to the Royal Armoured Corps, but the officers weren't transferred till the following July.
Why was this?
I don't know. I've got my own ideas about that. This is not official, but I had at the back of my own mind that it was going to be dependent on how we did on the conversion courses. And there were a lot of changes. I don't think it was just that people were kicked out for not being up to standard. But we got more and more RTR officers posted in. And as it will become apparent later on, being RTR, then they tended to take precedence over converted infantrymen. Anyway, be that as it may, that I think was why there was no official transfer of officers till the July.
On the 1st of January, then, you were officially converted. Were you then at a full establishment for a tank regiment?
No.
So I was going to ask you, how was it converted?
At that stage, we only had three squadrons, you see, A, B, and C. Four, if you include headquarters squadron.
And how is a squadron constituted?
A squadron headquarters and three troops of tanks.
And how many troops?
And a troop, three tanks. Oh, plus a scout car section. And by that time, we got a Remy LAD, that's a light aid detachment, attached to the unit. As time went on, we and this was a compliment to him because he was Peter Dodkins. He was way back from 50th Battalion. He went on an intensive training course and he became the technical adjutant. And under him, we got a fellow called Busby, who still comes to our reunions, even although he was Remy. And he was a tank expert, you know, mechanically a tank expert. And he was the, not the technical, the mechanical quartermaster sergeant. Establishment. We seem to get, but when? We seem to get one or two batches of, for want of a better term, what must have been a Royal Armoured Corps, either young soldiers battalion or a training regiment. And we almost had to revert in this new sphere to what we'd done when we got the civvies in at West Hartlepool. And there were these lads who'd done their basic training. But ours was the first unit they'd been posted to. Not a lot, but getting on for 100, I think, in various batches who came to us. And
which squadron were you attached to?
I was in and out and all over the place. I'd been in D Company, and I think it was then. I still was liaison officer, but I was billeted and I messed with D Company, and I think when D Company was split up between A, B, and C squadrons. It was then, I think, I went up to the regimental headquarters, doubling liaison officer with assistant adjutant. Yeah, I think that would be when it was. Whether we'd been a bit generous with the numbers that were posted out and we needed bringing up to establishment, or whether there was, it could have been, you see, the other ranks were sent to the 53rd and 54th Training Regiment RAC, and it could be that some of them fell by the wayside there and were replaced by these youngsters from RAC training regiments. I'm guessing, but I think that would probably, it could well probably be the answer.
Did the conversion prove a difficult task, bearing in mind the inexperience of the people involved?
Well, virtually everybody, except the cooks and the storemen, were away on training courses. For months afterwards, everybody in turn was away on courses. The CO and all the squadron commanders had 8 weeks at the AFV schools at Bovington or Tidworth, and the other officers had gunnery, wireless, and driving and maintenance courses, and at different places, most of them Bovington, I think. And 12 of us went to the OCTU at the Sandhurst Royal Military College. There we had, in outline, sausage machine conversion to the complete tank man, fortnight's driving and maintenance, fortnight's gunnery, fortnight's wireless, fortnight tank tactics. All complete.
What tanks were you working with?
Everything that they had under the sun, including, what were they? 1920s or maybe early 1930s, I think they were called A-38s. They were, I think, classed as medium tanks. There were also some light tanks. Valentines, they were devils to drive. The steering was by two levers. And in order to operate the steering, you had to lock one off before you pulled the other. And there was a knuckle that you had to get over. And if you pushed it gently, no good at all. You had to ram it forward to get it over that knuckle before you could get the other one. Whether that had anything to do with my being a lightweight and on a particularly muddy section of the training area outside Sandhurst, I managed to break the track on a Valentine and get it wrapped round the sprocket about four or five times. Most unpopular was Brewis on that occasion, because it was raining, bucketing down, and the mud was about 18 inches deep. Did we have Matildas then? Certainly we had some Covenanters.
You mentioned that part of your course was wireless. What wirelesses were you working with, and how efficient were they?
Well, we weren't very efficient at the start. If my memory serves me right, it was an 38 set. And when we went out, I'm jumping ahead. Wireless procedure. Morse, both to send and receive. What did we get up to? Something like a magnificent 10 words a minute or something like that. That training was a bit like the modern language laboratory. It rose in each in his own cubicle, and particularly for receiving. With the instructor and starting off very slowly, of course. I had to learn the Morse code to start with and gradually speeding up. Then we went out in pickup trucks with the sets mounted in them. And the 38 set had a limited range. It had a rod aerial. Not the sort of whippy fishing line one of later sets. Even within a fortnight, it was all very intensive training. Even within a fortnight, we'd picked up the rudiments. We weren't competent, quite obviously, in a fortnight, but we'd picked up the rudiments and we could... We could send and receive more slowly. We'd learned a bit about wireless procedure. And we'd got used to using the sets out in the country where reception was very variable. And so there was a lot of say again, all after, etc.
Were they efficient tank-to-tank communication devices?
Well, the connection with tanks was limited purely to driving and maintenance. It was pickup trucks with the sets mounted in them that we used, mainly on roads. I don't think it was even in mock-up troop formation or anything like that. I think the instructors get them into the rudiments of wireless. The tank tactics is somebody else's job. The gunnery was all a bit make-believe. Wasn't make-believe when I got that finger in the breech of a two-pounder, small as a two-pounder was. Wasn't at all funny. But it was limited to the actual gun handling, but not in a tank. It was indoors on a mounting with dummy shells, and it was simply practice in loading and unloading and getting your finger caught in the breech. But the other main thing to do with gunnery was on a RIPA. RYPA. Rolling, pitching, yawing apparatus. It's a tank turret mounted